Hello and welcome to another episode of India on Cricket 8, your number one podcast for all things Indian cricket related. I'm your host, Nikesh Raghani, and alongside me, Megha Sinha, based over in Delhi. And today we're going to review the fifth and final test between India and England and the series as a whole as well. England, of course, arrived in India in mid-January. High hopes they had of causing a bit of a stir and challenging India's 12-year unbeaten record at home. They started brilliantly, of course, in Hyderabad, winning that test match, taking a 1-0 series lead. Everything was going well for Bazball and those young England players, particularly the young spinners. And then it kind of went downhill from there for them. Slowly, India started to show their might and their class, their strength in depth as well. They completed a 4-1 series drubbing by romping home in Dharamshala in that fifth and final test match. And Megha, it was over in 3 days, and it looked really like only one team had turned up to play.
I think that's pretty much been the case since the third test. And obviously, even in the second test, of course, India won that one, but England obviously had their heads held high. But post that phase where England were 224-2 at the start of the third day in the third test, it's all gone downhill for England. There have been phases when they've dominated, but brief, and they've not been able to capitalize. And rightly so, Ben Stokes alluded to it and expressed his regret over the England team not making the most out of those tiny openings that India gave it, because India doesn't give a lot of openings when it comes to test matches in India. And emphatic win, 4-1, how well that sounds. And obviously, home record that was under threat after that first test win of England in Hyderabad looks all intact for the time being. Kevin Peterson mentioned that, I don't know why teams struggle to win in India, because they did it pretty easily all those years back in 2012. You are shaking your head. Doesn't seem that easy, though.
It's definitely not easy. I mean, it's typical Kevin Peterson comment to say, well, look how great we were. We were the last side to do it. Look how great I was. And it's all about him. So, yeah, we'll leave Kevin Peterson to one side. Brilliant player. But, yeah, anyway, we won't talk too much about him in this episode. But look, that fifth and final test, England, again, batted first. They won the toss. And, you know, you think, all right, things might well go for them. Can they make it 3-2 and go out with a high on their way back home? And, you know, no side has really competed to that level in recent memory in India to have a series so close, just one match in it, especially a 5-match series. 3-2 could have gone either way, really, if they won some of those big moments. But look, it all started well. They were 100-1. They then made their way to 175-3. And then it was the Kuldeep Yadav show, wasn't it? Ashwin, of course, chipping in with those 4 wickets as well. But Kuldeep to take those 5 wickets on the first day of a test match when, look, it is India, it spins, but this has been the theme through the whole series, isn't it? It's taking a bit of turn, but it's not a dust bowl. It's not been particularly difficult to bat if you apply yourself well. Just been some brilliant, brilliant bowling. And Kuldeep Yadav has put his hand up in this series and in this innings in particular and said, look, I'm probably your number one spinner going forward when Ashwin retires. And, you know, Jadeja's more sort of top six who bowls a little bit less now in home conditions because he's not required as much. So Kuldeep really putting his case forward there.
You know, when you said I am the number one, it took me a while actually, because obviously you then added when Ashwin retires. So obviously, he's been considered the third spinner for the longest time. And then obviously, with Akshar in contention and the sort of series that he had in 2021, because Kuldeep made his debut way before Akshar. But in the pecking order, obviously, Akshar later started coming ahead of Kuldeep. So then there was no room for Kuldeep because you cannot fit in 4 spinners regardless of the conditions. So you remember that Bangladesh test, the first test, he bagged the player of the match and then was dropped for the second one, and eventually in the hindsight that decision was proven true, broadly correct, because Ashwin and Akshar chipped in with the bat and helped India in that clutch chase. So Kuldeep, just because of his batting, because there was no doubting his abilities as a bowler, even when for a brief while in between he was struggling. So then it came to, could he contribute with the bat? Now that box also has been ticked, we come to it later, but purely as a bowler and how he is kind of improved his abilities, that is just phenomenal. Didn't get a look in the first test, but once he got that chance, he never really looked back. And even that turnaround in the third test, how how important Kuldeep was with Ravichandran Ashwin not around. And he didn't get off to a great start because he was taken for plenty when Ben Duckett was on song in full flow. But then after that, Kuldeep, once he clawed his way back into the series, there was no looking back. Since then, he's proved to be absolutely lethal. And coming back to Dharamshala as well. Now, not a lot of us were expecting Kuldeep to, or any of the Indian spinners, to get that advantage on the very first day, because we were talking about how 3 weeks back, at the same venue, on the same pitch, when the match was held, or when a Ranji Trophy match was held, 36 wickets that fell to pacers across the 4 days of the game. But then here it is, here we are, first day itself, Kuldeep making sure that the England batters dance to his tunes. What more could you ask?
Yeah, it was phenomenal. I mean, we were discussing as well in our preview for the fifth test match that do both sides play an extra seamer? Are those conditions going to be more conducive to swing and seam? And, you know, three spinners, is that a little bit too much? Are they all going to get a bit of a bowl? Well, look, class is class. And the fact that he's a wrist spinner as well, I think, is a massive advantage on any surface, because you look back in the history of the game, and yes, Murali was an off spinner, but he was a wrist spinning off spinner. Shane Warne was a wrist spinner. And you look at those great spinners, the two best in history over the longest period of time, they could turn it anywhere in any conditions, and batters feared them. Doesn't matter if we were playing in England, in New Zealand, they would be effective. In fact, you know, Shane Warne's record in India is a little bit worse than it is everywhere else. He took a bit of a tonking on a couple of those tours, but that was just his battles with Tendulkar and Sidhu and the likes of those guys. But everywhere else, he managed to do the job, as did Murali. And Kuldeep is a similar kind of beast, really. Wrist spinner, can turn it both ways, difficult to pick, got some subtle variations as well with flight and dip and pace and things like that. It's going to be a massive weapon for India going forward in the next few years, certainly, and particularly when Ashwin retires. But talking of Ashwin, 100 test matches, congratulations to him. I mean, he's got a record of taking just over 5 wickets per test match that he's played in his entire career. That is outstanding as well. And another good performance from him, 4 wickets in that first innings, 5 in the second as well, 9 in the match. What a way to celebrate your 100th game for India.
It doesn't always happen, right, that you bring your best game, bring your A game on your 100th test match, be it as a batter or a bowler. We've not seen phenomenal performances. But here was Ravichandran Ashwin wanting to make the most out of that milestone. He loves those milestones. And of course, he had scaled that 500 wicket peak not too far away, not too long back rather. And even on his 100th test, how phenomenal was he? And again, extending that Kuldeep point, first day wicket, didn't look obviously in any sort of discomfort. And remember, we were discussing how the Indian spinners at the start of the series looked insipid. They didn't look very convincing. Ashwin, in fact, the third test, there was no performance of note from him considering the stature that he enjoys. But then the last two tests, he's absolutely dominated. And second innings in the last, in the fourth test or the fourth test, and again in this test, both the innings, England batters absolutely look clueless, because obviously they would have seen a fair bit of Ashwin by then. So you'd assume that they'd understand Ashwin better, but it worked the other way around. Once Ashwin had studied all the 11 players who feature in the English team consistently, he had game plan for everyone, and he looked absolutely dominating against them. And those wickets weren't fluke. He set up his batters. He knew what they were doing. He was playing with their minds. And eventually, just the manner in which he was getting those top batters out, because obviously in the second innings, it was primarily the top batters that he got out. And again, fourth and fifth test, both the tests, he got to open the bowling in the second innings. That's obviously a mark of honour. And he loves them. He thrives on them.
I mean, look, it took him until the fourth test match in this series to open the bowling with the new ball, which was a little bit strange because he does it quite often in Indian conditions. But, you know, it just showed when he was given that opportunity, he thrived. And as you say, he absolutely loves being in the thick of things and being in the game at all times, and those milestones as well. So if ever there was a cricketer who was going to show up and, you know, not that he doesn't give 100% normally, but just have that extra fight in a milestone test match like this, it was somebody like an Ashwin. And, you know, again, 9 wickets in the match, outstanding. But look, 218 all out, England batting first, and then time for the bowlers to put their feet up. You know, there's that old saying, isn't there, that you never know what a good score is until both sides bat on that same pitch. And, you know, there were some doubts as to whether or not, you know, England spinners who sort of gradually got a little bit better through the series, the likes of Bashir and Hartley in particular, would they have an impact? Bashir, especially in that fourth test match and coming into this one as well, looked like their frontline spinner in the absence of Jack Leach. And was he going to cause the same sort of problems as Kuldeep and Ashwin caused? And it wasn't to be, really. I mean, India off to another flying start at the end of day one, Jaiswal and Rohit putting on a decent partnership. Jaiswal would be gutted at the way that he got out, just got a little bit carried away with trying to play that big shot. And then Rohit and Shubman Gill with those hundreds, again, they'll be gutted at the fact that they couldn't go on and make daddy hundreds. But all of your top five getting half centuries in that first innings, India posting a score which was more than enough to win by an innings, and that would have been the aim, having got England out so cheaply in that first innings. It was just every single thing went to plan, didn't it, through that innings. Even when they started to tail away and lost a few wickets in a flurry, Kuldeep comes in, hits 30. Ashwin comes in, hits a few as well. So it was just picture perfect, really. India couldn't have written the script any better if they'd tried before that innings.
There's no component that did not perform in this particular game. Overall as well, that has been the theme through the series. Everybody stepping up, maybe Rajat Patidar, barring that debut innings, he has missed out, and he missed out on the test as well. But every box being ticked by India. Now, there's one thing, of course, it's more about perception. As soon as India scored those runs, as soon as India got off to a flyer, you probably knew this was coming. Because just the perception that baseball had created with their exploits in the last 2 years, the perception that had built, that was beginning to fade away. I'm not saying that it'll not be as lethal as it has been in the past in the future, but then just for this series. Now, when they lost that second test, they obviously still had their heads held high. Anderson still claimed that England could chase 600. So, I mean, that fear that they had managed to seep in the minds of not the opponents, but at least the fans of the opponent teams, that still existed. But maybe, and obviously that was strengthened after India had scored mammoth first innings runs in the third test, and then Ben Duckett scored those 150 runs, and England at one point was 224 for two. I mean, we keep talking about this figure because probably midway through the series, it marked the turning point in terms of perception as well. There was a perception shift too, because what followed after that, that big thrashing in the third test, and after that in the fourth test as well, England couldn't put up much of a fight. So the perception had begun fading, and somehow you knew that England are not going to stage a sort of comeback, the sort of comeback that they did in the first test, where they wiped off 190 plus deficit. Although here as well, the deficit was close to that, around 250, but then that was going to be too much, and maybe an innings defeat on cards, and that's what we got to see. I'm just talking purely in terms of perception, because that is something that baseball is about. Do you sense a shift?
Yeah, I mean, look, this whole baseball argument, it's like, what is baseball? It's something that was made up by the press. It's not something that the team had any control over and all that. So basically, baseball is whatever we want baseball to be, right? England have their certain style of play, yes. It's not necessarily all about just trying to bash the bowling when you're batting and try and, you know, score runs quickly and just hope for the best. There has been a little bit about that, a little bit of England's play, which would suggest that it is about that. But look, overall, I think they're developing, and you can tell by the way Brendan McCullum spoke, particularly after that fifth test, where he's resigned to the fact that, look, they got a lot wrong in this series, and there's certain areas of improvement that are drastically needed if they're to perform and try and compete for a place in that World Test Championship final, which looks a long, long way off at the moment. I'm not sure mathematically what the permutations are. Still a long time to go, of course. It's evolving. But look, this is just India playing their way in their home conditions. We've seen it time and time again. they weren't bothered by what the opposition did. And I think that is the key thing to their victory in this series. And even in that first innings, it was just business as usual. You know, new debutant comes in, Devdutt Padikkal hits a 50. And even the way Kuldeep was batting, we'll go back to that as well, 30. And it wasn't just the runs that he scored, it was the way he scored them. His defense looked solid. When he was getting those loose balls outside the off stump, he was leaning back, cutting the spinners really well, picking the gaps, running hard between the wickets. He really, really has improved. And we've got a comment in here from our colleague, Jared Kimber, who has said, can Kuldeep bat at number 8? Not full time, but occasionally at a pinch. I mean, a good thought. Maybe in Indian conditions, I would argue that could be possible, but I'm not quite sure about how that would necessarily work in somewhere like England or New Zealand. Your thoughts on that?
I really like overall looking at the bowlers that India has. For the longest time, we kept lamenting over the fact that India does not have, maybe beyond Ashwin and Jadeja, bowlers who can chip in with the bat. In case of Kuldeep, it came to survival because he realized the reason why he was sidelined all through this period, and he made his debut way back in that Australia series 2016. So all these years, the reason he was sidelined was the fact that he couldn't contribute with the bat. And his coach as well mentioned that this is something that he began taking seriously recently, because again, you never know how long Ashwin will go on with his level of fitness, test match fitness, bowling fitness. Of course, he could go on for like how long Anderson has gone on. Ravindra Jadeja is supremely fit. Akshar Patel is relatively young. Kuldeep Yadav, obviously, he's way younger than the first two that I mentioned. So he couldn't have relied on them retiring at some point or them going out of form, because they've been consistent for the longest time now. So only option that was left in his case was to work on his batting, because as a bowler, like we've already harped upon, that he was always reliable. He always brought that X factor. So the only thing that was left was for him to work on his batting, and he did put in serious work in his batting. And through the course of the series, the way he's enhanced his reputation, because earlier maybe he could come and slog and score some runs or defend like it was nobody's business, defend nonstop. But right now, his defense looks solid. I mean, that might be too much to say about a batter who's just a tail-ender, who's just a night watchman, not even a night hawk. But in any case, Kuldeep Yadav has really grown in stature. And you never know, maybe some years down the line, we'd not just be talking about him as a bowler, but as a batter. But yeah, talking about the position that he bats in, also depends on what lineup India goes with across the conditions. And we're really privileged that our comment section is honored by a question from someone who himself is so analytical. But yeah, it's a fair question. In Indian conditions, I think it can be considered. But when India tours overseas, I have my apprehensions over it.
Of course, yeah. I mean, early days yet, but things going well with the bat for Kuldeep. Thanks for your comment, Jared. And remember, if you are watching live on YouTube or on Facebook, you can get in touch with us. Just leave a comment in the comment section, and we'll try and get to that as soon as we possibly can. So, look, India completing the job in the second innings. Not much to say, really. We've touched on it. Ashwin with his 5 foot in his 100th test, and it was almost like England couldn't wait to get out of there quickly enough, really. Maybe off to the golf course in Abu Dhabi again, do you think? Or maybe home. They've been away for a long time. But look, it was the series as a whole. Yashasvi Jaiswal coming into the side in recent times within the last year and making that spot his own at the top of the order. More than 700 runs in a test series, just the second Indian to do that. Sunil Gavaskar's done it twice, of course, his debut series in 71 against the West Indies, then a few years later at home against the same opposition as well. No other Indian has done it. I mean, yes, you could argue that not many have played in test series which have been longer than 3 or 4 matches, and this of course being a 5 test series gave somebody like Jaiswal that opportunity. But regardless of that, 700 odd runs in 5 test matches, just brilliant. And for somebody of his age as well, just to keep churning and churning and show that maturity, take that responsibility at the top of the order, just to get India off to those good starts, which we've seen is crucial in this series. Get off to a good start, everybody then follows suit, the morale's good, the momentum's good, and he just makes it look so easy, so beautiful to watch when he's in full flow as well.
Absolutely in command, reads the length early, knows whether to rock back on the back foot or go on the front foot, looks compact. And that's what you associate that Kharu style with, the Mumbai batsmanship with. But otherwise as well, beyond that, the way he dominates the opponents, the sort of fear he's in a position to instill in the minds of the opponents, that's mind-boggling. And he's just 22 years of age, but a generational talent, that's not a tag that gets accompanied with everyone. In Yashasvi's case, right from the time when he was playing school cricket in Mumbai to the time he broke into the under-19 team, there was that tag accompanying him. There was a lot of expectation around him, and he's absolutely living up to it. He announced himself with that thunderous stun in West Indies. South Africa series was relatively lean, and of course, there were questions being raised because most after the first test, now there is no way to hide. There's no place to hide when the team loses and loses so comprehensively like the team did in the first game. So obviously, Yashasvi's position was also immediately questioned as to whether he had the wherewithal to succeed in conditions that were not Indian or not similar to the subcontinent. But then obviously that test would remain and that test would come later. But the way he's performed in the series and 1,000 runs already to his name, we talk about getting off to the mark in test cricket, getting that test cap, all of that is so big. And that to happen at the age of 22, and then for him to respond in the way that he did, in difficult conditions as well. The series has not been all rosy from batters' point of view. There have been conditions, there have been phases when batting has not been easy. In fact, if you look at one of his innings in the, I think, the third test, wherein early morning conditions, it was not very easy with the ball doing its bit. The sort of maturity that Yashasvi showed early on, and from there on to capitalize on it, old head on young shoulders, and a long way to go for Yashasvi. Just the dominance, just the fear. We kept missing Rishabh Pant for the longest time because, again, he was somebody who could bring that. Yashasvi right at the top of the order to score those runs. And again, we've seen his IPL career as well. When he's dominant, he just doesn't look back. Even the previous season, he scored those truckloads of runs and he was so reliable for his team. But, absolutely impressive. But overall, looking at the youngsters in the series between both the teams, your top five picks?
Well, I want to talk in a little bit more detail about one of those top five picks. So Jaiswal definitely is in there. Sarfaraz Khan, I think. And look, he's not played the whole series, but to score three half centuries in five innings in early on in his test career. I've just been so excited for this guy to make his debut for India. There's been so much talk about him for the last couple of years. He's been banging out the runs in the Ranji Trophy. He's done everything that he possibly can to get into the side. And whether it was fitness-related issues or whatever it was, the reason as to him not being selected, nobody could really understand how somebody who's churning out that many, Bradman-like stats, really, averaging over 100 and 150 and things like that, just scoring ridiculous amounts of runs in the Ranji Trophy, to not get an opportunity ahead of the likes of some other players who are a lot more inconsistent and maybe perform well in the shorter formats, like in the IPL and in the shop window, so to speak, of Indian cricket, but haven't been playing red ball cricket as much, still getting opportunities ahead of him. It felt like it was a bit of a wrong that needed righting, and it's been done in this series. And you talk about Rishabh Pant there, somebody who bats at five or six for India usually. Sarfaraz is slotted in there at number five. And it doesn't matter if the team gets three quick wickets, your opposition, or whether they, India get off to a good start, then lose a flurry of two or three wickets. Then somebody like Sarfaraz comes in. And all right, we've seen him in his last couple of innings play a little bit more subdued at the start. He's taken his time, but he's got the ability to switch gears like somebody like Rishabh Pant. And when he does, it is so exciting to watch. And some of those sixes, he just eases the ball over the ropes, really. Doesn't even look as though he needs to put that much effort. He's got so much strength behind that ball. His timing is impeccable. He doesn't have any respect for the spinners, which I love, because he's like Birendra Sehwag kind of mold of player. Whereas if you're an off spinner or whatever, you've got no right really to be called a bowler, have you? According to these guys, I'm not going to show you any respect. Doesn't matter if you show Bashir or if you're Mutai Muralitharan, I'm going to try and smack you as far as I can. And quite a lot of the times I'll succeed. So I love that attitude about him. So he'd certainly be up there. Just before we go into the other youngsters, word on Sarfraz, how much has he impressed you? And do you think he'll get a reasonable run in the side, or do you think it's going to be difficult to keep him in there when Kohli and KL Rahul and those guys come back?
You know, you led me to the question that I was about to ask you. This Virat Kohli would be making a comeback. There's KL Rahul, and Rishabh Pant, of course, would be participating in this year's IPL. So sooner or later, he too would be making his test comeback. Now, Devdutt Padikkal has done fairly well in whatever opportunities he got, which is one innings to be precise as far as batting is concerned. Sarfaraz Khan in his five innings, contributing in three. And then, of course, you cannot at the moment ignore Dhruv Jarrail, because he won you that clutch test from difficult position. He steered the team through across the two innings. So who makes way for whom? That's really an interesting question. A headache for the selectors and the management. But talking about Sarfaraz Khan, now, obviously, again, another player who's come through the ranks of school cricket. He's, you know, he spent hours and hours playing domestic cricket for the longest time, come through age group cricket. I mean, he's taken the traditional route. It isn't like he played 1 year of good IPL and he got that IPL contract and then he straight away was taken into the Indian team. He's had to grind it out in the domestic circuit before that age group cricket for the longest time. And I remember even in the Under-19 World Cup, the sort of maturity that he'd show, because this is 2016 edition, he was the batchmate of Rishabh Pant. But unfortunately, in that particular edition, India's top order batter didn't get going any point in the tournament. Sarfaraz would show that maturity of stitching those stands with the batters down the order, play very maturely, farm the strike and ensure that India still got on to something respectable. And again, then he switched states between UP and Mumbai. But coming back to Mumbai, he started doing what he was actually meant for. He also had a brief run at the RCB, and I remember his debut innings. That sort of flashiness that was on display. Of course, there were fitness concerns, but those scoops were being unleashed with disdain. And you knew there was something exciting in here. So obviously, he's got those traditional shots. And then he's got those fancy scoops as well, those locks as well. So he can unleash them whenever he wants to. And that's same with Jaiswal. He's such a proper cricketer, but when he wants to, he can also go for those crazy shots because he's played enough of the IPL and has honed his skills. So, I mean, how tantalizing it is, how pleasing it is to just wonder what if these two players go on to realize their full potential by and by. In fact, I had the opportunity to see Sarfaraz's father, and he was absolutely a proud man. Mr. Naushad Mushir doing well at the Under-19 World Cup, also in the domestic Ranji Trophy, and now Sarfaraz beginning to realize his potential, beginning to get those chances. Really exciting times for Indian cricket.
Yeah, it just shows the strength in depth really that they have. And talking of that depth, you know, wicket-keeping position was much talked about coming into this series. KS Bharat seemed like the only viable option in the absence of Rishabh Pant. But in comes Dhruv Jarrail, another one of my top five, I'd say. Shubman Gill probably had a shout of being in there, but given his experience and the fact he's been doing it for, you know, 2 or 3 years now at the top level, I think Dhruv Jarrail deserves a place in that top five of sort of younger players or newer players coming into this level and performing well, you know, showing that he's basically a match winner. You know, the 100-odd runs that he scored in the previous test, absolutely crucial for India's chances of winning that. And, you know, shows good technique when he's batting. He's some good stumping, as catches off the spinners. Never easy to keep against India's spinners in these conditions as well, when this ball's doing a lot. And he's just slotted in perfectly. So I think long-term second-choice keeper, if Rishabh Pant comes back and performs like we know he can, then that has to go to Jarrail for the time being. In terms of England, Shoaib Bashir has to be in there. And it's an interesting story as well, with him not being in the country for the start of the first test because of the visa issues, then coming in and, you know, England were 1-0 up and performing so well, really. He bowled, a 44-over spell in this test match. He's never done anything like that for Somerset. He's never had to. He's hardly played any first-class cricket anyway, but when he has, you know, in English conditions, to imagine bowling even half of that would be quite a lot for him. So the fact that he's shown that he can bowl long spells in these conditions and be consistent, really, he's taken wickets, consistently since he made his debut and done really well. And I'd say Zach Crawley. I know Crawley's been around a couple of years now, but he's still just 26 years of age, and he's been a little bit in and out of the side as well in that time, but he's slotted in at the top of the order in the last 12 months or so. And again, I think the one regret he'll have is that he didn't go on and make a really massive score at the top of the order. He's got all those starts, those half centuries, the partnerships with Ben Duckett that have got England off to those good starts. Hasn't been able to kick on, but given the way the rest of the side has performed, I think Zach Crawley would probably make up my top five. Have you got any different suggestions?
Maybe the sample size is too little, but Dave that particle as well. A lot of potential, and not just going by his IPL numbers. And in IPL, when he didn't get to open, things didn't look too bright for him at Rajasthan Royals. But then before that, the debut season was phenomenal. But even before that, when he was playing for Karnataka, when he announced himself in his debut season, he did well across the formats. And in Ranji Trophy as well, was absolutely dominant, was getting truckloads of runs. So he has that domestic experience behind him. And he knew that opportunities would be scarce, because obviously once the senior pros come back, for Devdutt to be making his debut, the chances looked extremely bleak. So good for him that Rajat obviously wasn't available for selection in the fifth test. And once that opportunity came, he pounced upon it. He grabbed it with both hands and looked pretty impressive. Is obviously this lanky fellow and makes use of his height, his reach, and overall has got all those shots in his arsenal. So I think pretty impressive, and someone that you'd want to look forward to maybe once Rohit retires, because opening is a position that he prefers, though doesn't open anymore for Karnataka because he's realized that maybe that position is not up for grabs even in the IPL. So why not make yourself suitable to other positions by batting in those positions? But then considering that he started off as an opener, you never know. Yashasvi and Padikkal, it's so unusual, first of all, for us as an Indian fans to talk about left-handers, and so many of them, actually.
Yeah, it's great. And not just left-handers, but it doesn't matter who comes in, it seems, at the moment into this Indian test setup. The atmosphere is so good within the camp that they know they've got quality players coming in. They slot straight in. They get looked after well by the coaching staff, by the captain, by the senior players in the side. And generally, they just perform. I mean, Rajat Bhatida has been the only one who's, you know, not quite been able to grasp his opportunity in this series. For the rest of them, I mean, you look at who's missing. Kohli's missing. KL Rahul's been missing for quite a chunk. Jadeja's, you know, missed a little bit. Ashwin had to fly home for a family emergency. Akshar Patel's not even getting a look in the side. Rishabh Pant's not there. Bumrah was rested. You know, Mohammad Shami's not there as well. Let's not forget him. So there's so many massive world-class players who are not playing in this side, and yet they go and thump England 4-1. It just shows how strong Indian Test cricket is at the moment, particularly in home conditions. So all bodes well for the future, all looking good in terms of the World Test Championship table. Nice healthy lead there at the top of the table, despite the couple of point deduction as well that was added on, but still comfortably in the lead there. Australia beating New Zealand in that test match down there looks as though they put their foot forward to, you know, be the strongest contender at the moment to come close to India in second place. New Zealand still flying quite high in the table as well, and England with a lot of work to do, let's say, at this stage to try and claw their way back. So all exciting as far as the World Test Championship table goes from an Indian point of view. I suppose the question is, what the hell are we going to do now that these, you know, particularly for me, getting up at 4 a.m. Yeah, it's not nice getting up so early to watch Test cricket, but when India are playing well, it's, you know, it kind of gives you that extra buzz to something to look forward to in the day. No Test cricket for a while now. IPL is still, you know, just less than a couple of weeks away, so there's that to look forward to. But at the moment, of course, WPL, Women's Premier League, getting to the crunch stage of the competition. I suppose that can keep us going for the next week or so. And look, there's a couple of contenders to finish in top position. Delhi Capitals and Mumbai Indians both tied on 10 points at the top of the table. both sides have got a game left to play. So that's going to decide who goes straight through to the final. And then in terms of the eliminator, whoever finishes second will be up against either the Royal Challengers Bangalore or the UP Warriors. And they've got a game left as well. So all to play for with one game left in the competition. Now, I suppose with a competition like the WPL, it's new. It's just its second season. To get that excitement going, you want matches at the end of the group stage to mean something. And sometimes in the IPL, they don't, do they? We've seen that in recent times. And people kind of lose interest for a couple of weeks until the playoffs kick in. This is really exciting now, isn't it? We don't know who's going to finish top. We don't know who's going to finish second, third. It's great stuff.
In fact, the format ensures that the excitement remains till the end, because this premium attached to finishing at the top of the table, you go straight through. And then so both the teams that we're talking about, DC and MI, at the moment locked at the 10 points mark. So that makes it really exciting, because there's still so much to fight for at the end of the league stage. And similarly, the clash today is going to be so crucial as far as the number three spot is concerned, UP and RCB. And when it comes to RCB, of course, there's that baggage of history as well, which no matter what across the two tournaments, whether it be WPL or IPL, that is something that gets exchanged. And you could see that picture of Smriti Mandhana consoling Richa Ghosh and all those faces. And, that's something that we've grown accustomed to. But there's still hope left for them. And there's still a chance. They're still in with a strong chance. So it really sets it up nicely. And you trust MI to bring its A game in important clashes, because again, they have a history of doing that. But DC, on the other hand, although in IPL, have always struggled against MI in important clashes, but they've got somebody, a skipper, who knows how to rise to the occasion, who knows how to do well when it comes to clutch matches and to spearhead a team in such crucial clashes.
They've got some gun players, Mumbai Indians as well, haven't they? I mean, Harmanpreet Kaur, of course, you mentioned. Hayley Matthews, another favourite of mine, just a brilliant all-round cricketer. Nat Siver Brunt, it's almost like they've mirrored what the Mumbai Indians men's team has tried to do for so many years, just have that star-studded lineup. But look, little soft spot for the Royal Challengers Bangalore, Smriti Mandhana at the top of the order there. Probably my favourite cricketer across women's cricket. And, bit of the Sourav Ganguly kind of style, opening the batting and hitting over the top to the spinners and all that. So, everyone's got their favourite teams. Prediction from you? Who's going to finish top? Who's perhaps going to win?
You know, you've put me in a spot, but Smriti, good for RCB that she's been in great form this year, because last year, of course, her struggling, that mirrored RCB's struggles as well. But this season got off to a great start, had a bit of a stutter in between RCB, and then since then have clawed their way back, are still firmly in contention. But going by history, and I'm sorry, I'm driven by it at my conclusion, I think MI versus TC is what I'm expecting to see in the finals. And beyond that, I think it's very difficult to predict, although I'd give Meg Lanning my support, so... How about you?
Yeah.
Which team are you rooting for?
Being from Delhi, I'll just go for Mumbai then. If you're going for Delhi, I'll go for Mumbai. Hayley Matthews to hit the winning runs in the final. I'll even go into a bit of detail for you there. And listen, I got the India-England Test Series prediction right. I said 4-1.
Oh, yes.
At 1-0, or 0-1, yeah. I should say. It wasn't looking too good, but I stuck to my guns. I said, no, India are going to win the next four. It's fine. It'll be exactly as I predicted. And there you go. So 100% record on this podcast so far. Let's see if I can be proven right once again with the Women's Premier League final. Of course, once that does conclude, we'll be back with you to talk through exactly what happens in the playoffs and in the final as well. And we'll continue to look ahead to the IPL as well in future episodes. So do make sure you join us. Do subscribe and like to our page, whether it's on YouTube, on Facebook, whether it's the podcast feed via your podcast provider, whoever you're using, Spotify, Apple, wherever it is, Google, Just make sure you hit that subscribe button, and we appreciate all of your support. We'll be back with you soon, but for now, from both of us, it's goodbye.